Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mike.
Shall we do the podcast thing?
Yes.
You hesitated. Why did you hesitate?
I was making sure that I believed it. And I do.
Good man. Welcome to Hacking the Gripson, where we continually try to think of interesting things to start the podcast off and are not always successful. You be the judge. today on the podcast, we're going to talk about SPAs. No, we're going to talk about SPAs, which is an acronym that refers to a place you go to for health and wellness. Maybe a nice jacuzzi bath, maybe a massage.
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, in the world of web, it's none of those things. It actually stands for single page application. And really, it's just a fancy word for a web app that you probably use, either on a desktop or on a phone or a tablet. I think probably the best example of an SPA would be Google Mail or Gmail. I think most people are, if not daily users of it, are aware of it. And it is definitely a good example of an SPA. Matt, before I get into the kind of history of where they come from, what do you know about SPAs?
Very little. I think the first thing I thought of when I heard of an SPA the first time was Facebook, which I think is similar. I know very little about them other than basically they're a page you go to, and instead of going to another HTML page and another HTML page and another HTML page, it's, hey, I'm on this one HTML page, and now I am loading new content on this same page.
That's pretty much it, yeah. But to put it into, to couch it, to chez it, to lazy boy it into the proper context, we got to go back. We got to do a little diddly-oop back to the... I guess it would be the 90s when the
then appropriate world... that we did the Wayne's World.
Yes, it is, which is a great classic movie. The beginnings of the World Wide Web, which are, you know, most people just think of when you go to a browser like Chrome or Firefox or Safari or Edge or Opera or whatever, and you load a web page like Google Mail or like Gmail or like Facebook or CNN.com or something like that. I don't know. You're on your computer, you're talking to another computer, and you're using most likely TCP/IP, which is a transfer control protocol / internet protocol, which is really just some fancy acronyms for how your computer is talking to another computer over the internet. And more specifically, you're using what is called HTTP, which is hypertext transfer protocol, which is, I mean, it's protocol. A protocol is basically like, okay, yes, I have a computer and I want something from another computer, i.e., you know, the homepage of CNN. How do I get it? How does my computer tell this other computer that I want that? And you do that over HTTP. You make a request, generally a GET request for CNN.com. And there's a server that's like, oh, I'm CNN.com. And I'm running some kind of web server software, and I have the homepage of CNN, which means the HTML. It means probably some CSS, probably some images, probably some JavaScript that adds some interactivity to the page, and then it sends all that over multiple requests, actually, back to your computer, and then your browser displays it all how it knows how to do it. And that's just the index.html page, which may be an HTML page, maybe an ASP page, maybe a PHP page, maybe Java, you know, who knows? But like, as far as you're concerned, it's like a page of code that your browser interprets, plus all the other stuff like the CSS and the JavaScript to pretty it up, or to improve it. Sorry, I don't want to use the word pretty, which is loaded. Now, when the web first started, you would grab that homepage, But then there would probably be links on that page, hyperlinks that you'd click, and they would take you to other pages that are on the same domain. So you would go to like a news story on CNN.com. I never go to CNN.com. I don't even know why I'm using that as an example, but it's the first thing that's coming to my mind. And so you go to another page that has its own HTML and CSS and JavaScript, perhaps, that shows you a news story with its images, and it has links to other things. And that's essentially the World Wide Web, is a bunch of pages on computers that are linked through these hyperlinks that you click. And that, I mean, I don't think there's like an MPA acronym, but that's more or less what that would be, a multi-page application. I think maybe a backronym.
We just call that normal.
Yeah, or a website. A site.
Standard.
Yeah, standard, normal, default. But something happened after several years of that kind of being the norm of you going to a website and clicking around on all the pages inside their site. You start getting into web apps instead of websites. And like I said, Gmail is probably like the perfect example, because when you go to gmail.com, you're presented with your inbox and folders and maybe a button to like compose a new window, a new email message. But when you click on things, you don't go to like gmail.com/otherpage.html. You pretty much stay on gmail.com's homepage the whole time. And the content, as Matt said, changes as you click it. Like you click on a message and it loads the message. You click on compose message and a little window pops up where you put the to and the subject and the text and all that kind of stuff. And
it might look like you're going to different web pages because the address bar does often on single page applications change. But if you watch around like so I'm just clicking around in Gmail right now just to watch it for myself. And like there's aspects of the page that never go away. Like it does not it does not load a new page and then bring things in. It's like, okay, I've loaded the framework of this page and now I'm just replacing bits and pieces of it.
Right. And really, like, I mean, obviously I did not design single page applications like the
Wait, this wasn't something you created? I'm confused.
I did not create Gmail, much to your chagrin. The main technical difference and how it appears to a user is that, like you said, there are certain elements of the page that just kind of stay the same all the time because it's more of an app. And when I say that, I mean it's trying to sort of mimic a desktop application. Like, for example, you know, if you're running Microsoft Outlook, that's, or the browser you're in is an app. And that app has certain things that stay on the screen all the time, like the address bar and the tabs, et cetera, et cetera. The stuff that changes is in the main browser window as you click on things. So this Gmail is essentially like an app inside your app that's doing the same thing. It's keeping like, you know, the links on the left side that go to your inbox or your sent or your, you know, trash. You know, the button to do a new message is probably like always there. And the stuff changes. And I mean, I think the main reason for that is that we all started spending so much more time on the web than we did before, and we wanted it to be more than just a bunch of static pages that you click around. You know, that there was more that could be done with the web. And so JavaScript is really the heavy lifter here, and it's part of this other acronym called AJAX, which is an asynchronous JavaScript and XML, which is not, I mean, XML is a lot like HTML. I think HTML is actually, I think they're both derived from SGML, which is like,
I'm not sure what the derivation is, but yeah, they both use a similar style of like tags. Like the syntax is very similar. But yeah, I remember the first time I learned about AJAX, I was, I didn't quite get it because it wasn't explained well. And single page applications explain the concept of AJAX better to me than the way I'd heard it originally, which is just you have a thing, you have a page, and we're going to dynamically load some content on the page.
Right.
We're going to use JavaScript to replace portions of the web document with some information as you tell it to. And it doesn't even need to be like from the back end or whatever. It's you do a thing or something causes the content to change.
You bring up a good distinction, though, between kind of like client-side content and server-side content, because back when everything was a bunch of websites, essentially everything you clicked sent a request to a server, and then that server returned everything again, which includes the HTML, which is essentially like the structure of the page, the CSS, which changes how it looks, and the JavaScript, which changes the interactivity of it. And that all gets sent every time you click on a link to change to a different page. That can be inefficient because when you're on, yeah, imagine if you were on Gmail and every time you clicked into like a message, the whole page refreshed and it did all the folders and, you know, all the UI that is always there. Every single time you clicked on something, it said, hey, server, give me all this stuff. So we realized that, wait, there's a lot of stuff on the page that doesn't need to change just because you click on something. So instead, it uses JavaScript to say, like, hey, JavaScript, go to the server. Or maybe, like you said, it's just something on the client. Like if there's some kind of a window that pops up, dialogue, modal, whatever, that code may be in the code that you already have in your browser's cache. And it's just saying, wait, show it, make someone click a button, and then hide it again. Or if you're like, load this message, okay, go to the server, get me that message's, markup, styling, blah, 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 and then replace the page with that. But don't give me the folders, don't give me the top thing where it says Gmail, because that's already there. It's done. It's inefficient for the server to send that every single time. And so that's more or less what Ajax is. And I remember first doing Ajax and how weird it seemed to do that, because I was, you know, I've been around since, we've both been around since the web was just websites and not web apps. Yeah. And this was not a
thing.
My
first job was a webmaster. HTML 1.0.
Yeah. And what are we on, HTML 4, 5?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
I lost track years ago.
But yeah, essentially the point of an SPA, a single page application, is that there are a lot of things on the web like Gmail or like Google Calendar or to use an example that I'd like to draw on just because I made it is Boggle, which is my daily Boggle-like game where you get a 3x3 grid of letters and you try to make as many words as you can out of them. It is an example of an SPA. Like when you go to Boggle on the web, you can click around on all the stuff that can be clicked on, but none of it goes to anything besides Boggle, the Boggle homepage. Like it never goes to another page on the server. Now, that's not to say that there is anything, that there's nothing but the homepage. I mean, there is an index.html. When you go to Boggle, it loads that page and it basically stays on that page forever. And when you click on things, all of the things that change are being done by JavaScript, either pulling in stuff from the server or changing client-side stuff that you see. Like if you click on a letter or if you submit something and it says whether that was a correct word or not, that is all being done through JavaScript. And that's not even touching the server. All the server loading happened when you went to the homepage. And now you could more or less disconnect from the internet, which is another major part of SPAs, is trying to make these apps that we use on the web have kind of an offline mode where it tries to do as much of the heavy lifting initially so it's in your browser's cache, client side. And then as you click on things, all that stuff is already loaded and it's just showing and changing and updating stuff. So you don't have to make this constant go to the server, give me new stuff. Does that roughly make sense, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, that's my more or less understanding of how those work. You certainly have more experience in this area than I do. But yeah, that's okay. That's how I understand it to work.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to kind of, even though this is not a visual medium, so you can't see the code base that I'm looking at for Boggle, although I will put the GitHub link. So if anybody is interested in looking at what the actual code looks like for something like this, this web app compared to, you know, I wish I had an example of a web page or website that I did like 20 years ago before any of this was normal, just to compare and contrast what a code base between these two different things looks like. But this web app is more or less an index.html page, which has the markup for the entire thing you see since once you go to the homepage, which has like the title in the top, it has the tiles that you click on, it has the game mode, daily versus free play, it has, you know, what number, like today is Bogdol number 546 for Sunday, April 14th. And then it has kind of like a toolbar of sorts at the bottom where you submit a guess or you delete a letter, et cetera, et cetera. And then it also has some links in the top left and top right, which are for like a help menu or a settings menu or your stats, like, you know, how many, if you've played this before, what are your stats? And in the code base, like all of that is more or less in that one page, index.html. But that's not how every SPA works, and it definitely depends on, because I wrote this as a custom framework. Like, this is not using React, this is not using Angular or Vue or anything like this. This is literally, I made a page, and then I have a folder called Assets, which has all the CSS, has all the JavaScript, it has some JSON files that have the word lists for the text that gets used for the game, and some other, and a couple audio files that play if you turn on the sounds. Beyond that, that's basically the whole web app. Now, if you compare that to something like my blog, like I have a blog at my personal kind of businessy website, that's actually done in something called Jekyll, which is a static site generator and is not an SPA. And when you click on blog posts or you click on like the projects link or the about link, those are actually separate HTML, or actually in my case, they're markdown files. And markdown is just a plain text format that also allows for formatting if you view it in something that understands markdown.
It's a markup language.
Yeah, it's another markup language. It's just...
Or markdown language, I guess.
Right. But unlike HTML, which uses kind of like, you know, the greater than less than tag style, markdown uses as much... It's plain text. You know, you use asterisks for bold or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, if you read a markdown file...
Just you can read
in
it.
In text, you can read it. Whereas if you read HTML, it's a little hard to read.
Yeah, so I mean, so as far as SPAs go, Bogdol's not the only one I've written, but I would say the ones that are not in some kind of custom framework, I have done Vue.js on a project, and it has its own kind of like directory structure. Like you do new Vue.js project, and it just makes like a templated bunch of files and folders, and then you go in and modify them. Bogdol, on the other hand, is... You know, all written from scratch, more or less.
So you did not use a specific framework to write Bogdol?
I didn't, no.
So I assume something like your blog was written using, I'm going to guess, Ruby on Rails or something similar, unless you just did it in WordPress directly.
No. It uses Jekyll, which is a static site generator. Yeah, so it's...
So it's still got something that is generating... So you have like a source and then it generates out the structure.
Whereas
so the last
is
time I wrote a web page or a web app, time I wrote a web app was not a single page application. It was in Django, which is the Python version of Ruby on Rails. And I've done that a couple of times. And I guess one of the questions I would have about an SPA is like, okay, let's say I'm familiar with those tools. Can you use those to create single-page applications? And if you can, does it make any sense to, or is it just completely like orthogonal concepts?
It's not orthogonal. I will say that when I made the Advent of Code website, that is actually made in Ruby on Rails. And that was mainly because for the 2023 year, I wanted to learn Ruby on Rails for real. And so I made a website in it to put all the solutions on.
Ruby on Reels.
Faux Reels. Whether you use a framework or not is very... It really depends on the project and your familiarity and your curiosity. I would say that for an SPA specifically, you can use a framework, but you don't have to. Like, I've done both, I guess. And it really depends on the complexity of it. I remember when I wrote Bogdl, Wordle was still pretty fresh in the blogosphere, the social consciousness. And so...
The zeitgeist?
The zeitgeist, yes. I modeled Bogdl very heavily on Wordle. And I am not ashamed to admit that I had Wordle open in another tab with the developer console open to kind of see what they were doing. I believe Wordle is actually written in Vue.js. Now that I've done a Vue.js framework project... I could see by looking at the code, the way it's structured and the kind of tags it uses, like, oh, this is a Vue.js thing. But I didn't know Vue.js at that time. And so I was not brave enough to write Bogdl in Vue.js. And I was just like, well, I'm just going to take what Wordle, you know, exports into, when you take the source and you actually put it on the web as the flat HTML file, I'm just going to look at that and kind of model Bogdl after it, which is why it looks a lot like Wordle did then. I mean, now that it's been bought by the New York Times, they've changed it a bit and it looks somewhat different. But, you know, the basic structure is there in how you go to one page and everything you do is on that page. You know, Wordle does not have any other pages. If you click on like the help menu, much like on Bogdl, it doesn't go to like /help.html. It just opens a modal window on top of everything. Now, that the text in that box is in the JavaScript file. So there's essentially like a modal function, and I attach it to various things. So it's like when you click on this thing, open up a modal with this text and et cetera, et cetera. And so that's how it's handled. But that's it. So it's that could be in a separate file. It could be, but it doesn't need to be, and it isn't. It's really just in a JavaScript. It's all in the same JavaScript file. So this is not how you have to write an SPA, but I mean, like, there was no reason.
Yes, it is. It's the only way. Don't do it any other way.
Yes, what Matt said. This is the canonical way to make an SPA. And also, like, Bogdl could... I don't see why it would ever be anything but an SPA. Like, this is not a website. Yeah. This is a web application. It is a thing you go to use, much like you would use... Much like you would play any other game. You know, like, think of any game... like puzzle game that any of our dailies that we do, they're all SPAs. You know, Wordle is an SPA, Connections is an SPA, Spelling Bee is a datagrams. They're all SPAs. You go to a page, you do a thing, you leave. There's no other pages you go to, and that's just what they should be. Like, I don't see a world where Connections becomes a website, because that's not what it's for.
Here's a probably dumb question, because I think I already know the answer to it, but
okay.
Can you have SPAs within a site? So, like, you would go to different, like, you have a website, and mm-hmm. then it's got one of the parts of it is, like, its own unique web application.
Yes. Yes, you can. And I sort of kind of do that. So I have, like, I have one website that I use that's sort of like a portal to all the stuff that I do on the internet, and some of the things that are on it are just like in a subdirectory of that homepage. Now, that's all kind of in the back end server configuration, so you don't really see that. But sure, you can throw an SPA into a sub folder of a file structure that's within another site. Everything, you know, when you write websites or web apps, you know, it's the server configuration of it is a whole nother, you know, podcast topic, but it can all be made to look however you want in the browser URL. You know, you can make something that physically is in 5 deep file structure on a file system, but is a top level domain to anybody that visits it. So That's my long-winded answer to your question.
Cool. No, that's more or less what I thought. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think it would be easy for someone to think like, oh, single page. Okay, that means that I go to this URL and it's the only thing and there's nothing else there. And I'm like, not necessarily. So I think I came close to writing an SPA at one point in time on the scheduling application that I wrote for my old theater. One of the things that I built in there was a dynamic calendar view for selecting which dates you were available. And that did everything within that view stayed there. And I would just replace pieces of it. And I think that's the closest I personally have ever come to writing an SPA outside of writing an actual application that was not a web page.
Yeah. Well, it, what's funny is that we're using Slack right now to have this huddle so we can talk to each other and see each other while we record this podcast. And I'm using the desktop app version of Slack right now to do that. But you can also view Slack. I don't know if you can do a huddle in it, so that's why I went back to the app. But I've been running Slack in a tab in Chrome for the last week just to see how that feels. And it more or less works exactly the same because Slack itself is sort of like a single page application that just gets web viewed on whatever platform you're looking at. If you're looking at it on your phone, if you're looking at it on a desktop app, if you're looking at it as a tab in a browser, it's all kind of the same code chunk. It's just how are you viewing it? How are you viewing it? But it's really just a single page application because you are clicking on things that are just replacing what you see in this one kind of frame, whether it's in a tab or an app or your phone. That's kind of become like, I mean, it's probably written using Electron, which is a very popular way of writing an app that can be cross-platform on Windows, Mac, phone, because it's all just like a web app that's being viewed in a different way.
Yeah, because it's the same application effectively.
Mm-hmm.
One expects it's more or less the same code. I'm sure there are aspects that are different in places. But I think the core of it is all the same. And then Electron just lets you load it in different environments.
And I think more to the point about SPAs is that when I think of making a project, when I think of doing some kind of project on a computer, my go-to now is a web app, which is generally a single-page application. Like, I could have written Bogdl as a Mac OS desktop app. I could have opened up Xcode and started a Swift project or even an Objective-C project and used all of the Mac OS kind of API to write Bogdl to where it came out as a .app, and you would download the .app and you would double-click on it and you would get this one window with the grid and everything like you see it. But like, my skill set is much slower that way, and it would only run on Mac. I would have to make a completely different project for it to run on Windows, a completely different project for it to run on Linux, a different project for it to work on your phone. But no, I wrote it once as a web app, as a single page web app, and now it runs on all of those places as long as you have a browser. Like, the browser has become kind of the engine that runs so many of these things that we use because of that very reason. People don't want to write native versions of everything because then you have to maintain them and they all work differently. But if you make it as a web app, and Chrome and Firefox and Safari generally have roughly the same abilities and features, definitely not the same, but close enough to where, I can reasonably assume that Bogdl runs everywhere if I write it once. And that's kind of the dream, I think, for developers, is to write once and run anywhere. I think Java originally was the plan for that, but I think...
I was going to say, that's the first time I heard that expression was around Java.
Yeah, but I never got into Java deep enough to entertain that thought. Instead, I got into web development, and HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, I think, has, in 2024 at least, has become the go-to for lots of people that want to write an application or a game like this. Like, I just, there's no world where I'm going to write Bogdl as a Mac OS native app. There's just no point to do that. Now, of course, there are reasons to write desktop apps if you use specific OS native API stuff, if it's heavily graphical, if there's a lot of processing. You know, writing it as a web app still has cons, but for something like a Bogdl or a Bogdl clone, a single page application was the only thing that I would have ever entertained. Yeah.
My kind of thinking is, I want a desktop application if I am going to have this thing open all day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I'm going to run this thing. It's not going to really, like, my IDE, I don't want that to be in a browser. I want that as its own window that I can move separately from my browser and isn't eating into, you know, I don't have to worry about the Chrome overhead eating into my code. But for like a game that I'm going to open up for 5 minutes, yeah, that should just be a web page. You know, that makes me think of like iOS apps. I remember this was when the App Store first became a thing, and I wrote Shut the Box way back when. I saw an in real life Shut the Box yesterday, by the way. That was
really?
That amused me. I was like, hey, I made a digital version of that once.
Awesome.
Yeah. Side note. I wanted very much to have a native iOS application, partly because I was trying to learn the iOS ecosystem, but mostly because I find that when I want to do things on my phone, I prefer to have them in their own application so I can switch to that application. Like, I don't generally want to run everything in my web browser. All of my Wordle things are web browser tabs that I would much prefer to have like a application folder somewhere that I can go, okay, I want to open Wordle now, do a thing, export, done, and close it down, as opposed to just leaving these tabs open all the time in my on my web browser.
Mm-hmm. And yet there are Chromebooks that fly in the face of everything you just said.
I'm saying this how I like to
work. Right, yeah. Well, and that's why I was like, I've never tried to run Slack in my browser. Let's see how that is. I mean, it was honestly very similar experience. I think the one major negative is that I'm in several workspaces, and as far as notifications go, the browser notifications do not seem to work cross workspace unless you have them open in a tab per workspace, whereas the native app has them all like in a sidebar and all the notifications are all happening at once. Also, I was just curious about the memory footprint of running Slack in, like you said, in with the overhead of Chrome. And I'm looking at the memory that Slack uses up as a desktop app, which seems to be somewhere in the like 1 to 1.5 gigs of memory to run the app with like 7 or 8 workspaces all at once, whereas each tab of Slack on your browser is the same thing. It's like 1 to 1.5 gigs, but it doesn't have the awesome cross workspace notification thing. So if I want to have notifications for like personal Slack and work Slack, for example, I would have to use 2 to 3 gigs of memory to have both of those tabs open, which I can already see. I mean, I've got a lot of RAM on this machine, but, you know, it's still finite.
But still, yeah.
Yeah. So my point is just that, like, single-page applications on the web are very common now. When Gmail came out, that was like, what is this thing? It was crazy. Like, and it's still, I think, as we were saying before we started recording, like, probably one of the best web apps ever, and we use it. We've been using it every day since it came out. And I think that's just kind of like, that's what we expect to exist for a lot of things that we use all the time. I mean, I have multiple Gmail tabs open. I also have a Google Calendar tab open. I also have a Mastodon tab open that is, you know, it's more or less a single page application. It's just the feed that I'm just looking at all day. You know, I have Bogdl open. It's a single page application. So many of the things that I do on the web now are just pinned tabs of single page applications that I just refer to during the day. Those could be desktop apps. And maybe you prefer those to be desktop apps, and that's fine. That also exists. But I'm just saying the web has matured to the point where that could just run everything.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think, yeah, I think that's, you know, a single page application is still a website. It's just a one page website that all of the changes are done through JavaScript instead of asking the server to give me everything every time you click on something. It's become pretty common when you have an app that you want to use for productivity or games. But there's still websites, you know, that have multiple pages. Like I said, my blog is a static site generator, so every blog post is a file. But it could also be a single page application where all of that stuff sits in a database. And I just use JavaScript to pull the blog post from the database and update a page. You know, I could do it that way. But I like the Markdown style of having a blog post be a Markdown file because it makes it easy to export to another system. So that's in favor of having multiple pages over one page that pulls from a database or pulls.
Makes sense. Know,
yeah. So, I mean, it's not like single page applications are the only way to go when you're making stuff on the web. But for a lot of very good, useful reasons, I like it. And I've used it a lot. And framework or no framework, it's still a go-to for me. When I think of a new project, like if I'm thinking about, I'm still thinking about a new daily game after Bogdl and Nebutal, it's going to be probably the same thing. I might just copy the code base of Bogdl and just change all the stuff to whatever the new thing is because it works. So,
cool. Yeah.
So that's SPAs. Look into them. Also, the yeah. parts with the massages and the hot stone baths or whatever. Those are good too, I hear.
Yeah, we hope you enjoy those. Yeah, get some relaxation.
Exactly. While you're writing your SPA on your laptop. Yeah, but I think that will wrap up this episode. If you want to listen to more Hacking the Grepsen episodes, you can get them at hackingthegrepsen.com, which is not an SPA. I believe it has multiple pages, but our podcast episodes are there nonetheless. And until the next time we talk at you, we now return you to your regularly scheduled lives already in progress.